All right, we're getting to start a new book today. We're going to be starting in 1 Samuel. As we've been going through the Old Testament verse by verse, and we're up to Samuel now. So this is an interesting book that some people have called this, that the kind of the theme here is the flesh versus the spirit, because you've got King Saul, who's going to be coming in the picture here down the road, and he's kind of the picture of the flesh. And then you have King David coming in after him, and he's kind of the picture of the spirit. So that's kind of the big picture going on in Samuel, and it's named after the prophet that the Lord's going to use to kind of bring in all these things and go through a transition period between the time of the judges, and now the Lord's bringing them into the time of the prophets and the kings. So we'll see some of that going on as we get into our study. Now, 1 Samuel, as far as time-wise, it begins at the end of the book of Judges. So Israel was still in a time period where everybody did what they thought was right in their own eyes. And we'll see that again as we get into our study today. So most of the people there were just doing things their own way. And, you know, we just finished seeing the book of Ruth, which was a shining light in the time of darkness there for Israel as a whole. But don't get the idea that Israel was turning around and waking up doing things the Lord's way just because, you know, we saw Ruth and Boaz really walking, stepping up and walking with the Lord. So 1 Samuel, it doesn't start during the time period of Ruth and Boaz where, you know, you might hope things were turning around for the good. But most people think that the story of Samuel actually, his birth and everything, actually took place around the very end of the Samson's days. And if you remember, when we saw Samson in the book of Judges, that was still a pretty ugly time for Israel. So this is kind of the background of what's going on as we start to look at the story here in 1 Samuel. So let's jump into 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 1. Now there was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim of the mountains of Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. And then it says, and he had two wives. So as the Lord tells us about this guy, he lets us know a few things about him. He's got two wives. The name of one was Hannah, and the name of the other, Peninnah. And it tells us even a little more information. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. So the Lord starts out by telling us about this guy that lived in the territory of the tribe of Ephraim. So they refer to him here as an Ephraimite, basically. But when you look at his ancestry over in Chronicles, you find out that he's really in the tribe of Levi. So he's a Levite by bloodline. So it ends up that you've got this man who's a Levite living in the area of Ephraim. So you could refer to him either way if you wonder why they call him that. It's kind of like if we said, you know, somebody is from Belleville, but they're actually living in Swansea now. So you might introduce him to somebody and say, yeah, this guy's from Swansea, and that's where he lives. But you could also say he's from Belleville because that's originally where he was from. So that's why you see a kind of a variance on that if you're looking and wondering what's going on. Now, it's interesting, too, that I think somebody mentioned the Lord doesn't bring up here that he's a Levite, and they think there's a good reason for that. The Lord, because of the ministry he has for Samuel, he's not going to base it on his being a Levite. He's actually going to base it on his call to ministry by the Lord. And I think that's really important for us today, too. When a person is called by the Lord to do some kind of ministry, whatever that would be, it's not based on our bloodline, you know, where we came from or who we were born from. It's based on that call that God gives. And I think that is really important. I heard a pastor say one time that, you know, when he was going through the ministry, and he's been in the ministry quite a while, he said there were times where he had some real low spells. And he said, you know, the only thing that kept me going then was knowing that I was called. He said, because everything else in me said, throw in the towel. We're done here, you know. But knowing that God had called him and this was his responsibility, he was able to keep going. So we're going to see that with Samuel. God really made a specific call in his life. Now, the Lord introduces us here to this man named Elkanah. And he tells us this man had two wives, Hannah, and her name means grace, and then Peninnah, and her name means pearl. So he tells us that one of the wives had children, but the other one did not. Now we can get from this, since Hannah was named first, you know, it mentions her as the first wife here before Peninnah came into the picture. Since she was named first, she was probably the first one that he married. So here's the picture. He marries Hannah, but she's not having kids. So rather than wait on the Lord, he decides to get another wife. And that's where Peninnah comes in. You know, not waiting on the Lord is a danger that we face too. You know, and we're tempted to do things our own way, just like he apparently did too. The way that we think is best. I'm sure if you talk to him, he would justify that. Well, I got to have kids. My life is supposed to have, you know, I'm supposed to have a new son, and they're supposed to carry the name on and all that. And it's not working for her, so what's the solution? Find somebody else, you know? And we could see him justifying that in his own mind. You're not going to pull that off before the Lord, though. Yeah. So notice here that we still see the leftovers of the way people lived during the entire 300 years during the book of Judges. You know, they're still doing things in their own mind what they think is right, even though God says is wrong. So this should be a real warning to us as well, that when we fall in the trap of doing things our own way, we may get stuck in that place for a long time. And it might be really hard to get out of doing things the wrong way. Now, although their culture at that time allowed polygamy, they didn't have a problem with that, having more than one wife, the Lord never approved of that. You know, this was not a good thing that Elkanah was doing by having two wives. And any time in Scripture where we see multiple wives, there's always trouble in the home. And the Lord is very clear to bring that up to us, to say, well, they thought it was better to do this, and here's what they ended up with, you know, a house full of problems. So whenever we go against God's design for marriage or for the family, we should just know that there's going to be some bad problems because of it, and there's not going to be peace in the home. And the Lord lets us know that over and over again as we see those pictures here. So I'll get back to verse 3. It says, this man went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And that's what the place where the tabernacle was at that time. And the Lord tells us also the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. So he introduces us to these guys as well, because they're going to come up in this story later. So this man, this Elkanah, was faithful in going to worship the Lord every year like he was supposed to. And he did it the proper way, because we're told that he actually went to Shiloh, which is where the tabernacle was at. And if you remember some of the stories in Judges, they would just buy their own priest, you know, rather than go all the way to Shiloh and do their thing. They thought, well, just we'll buy it and start our own deal. And that was always a problem too. So at least he's doing that part right. He's going to Shiloh where the tabernacle was at. Now, the Lord also introduced us to the two priests who were serving at the tabernacle, and they were the sons of Eli. And we're going to find out down the road that Eli was a godly man, but his sons were very evil. So we'll see here that this was really a messed up time for Israel when you put all these things together. I mean, you've got guys doing their own thing like Elkanah, jumping the gun and figuring that if he couldn't have kids with one wife, then he'll just get another one too, you know, and add that to the family line here. And then you've got the sons of the high priest who are living very wicked lives. We'll see that evidence down the road here too. But the wild thing is that with all this stuff going on, the people were still coming to worship God. So it ends up that the people were just really going through the motions. You know, they weren't worshiping God with their hearts and with their lives. You know, this is what we have to guard ourselves against. You know, don't fall into the rut of just going through the motions. When we come to worship, really do cast your cares on the Lord. He wants to free you up, you know, so you can just focus on worshiping him. So be sure we do that. And we really need to cast our cares on the Lord every day when you think about it, so we can worship God every day in our life, right? And not just on Sunday mornings while we're singing worship songs. And worship is actually a daily lifestyle of obedience to the Lord. And David brings that out really clear in the book of Psalms, if you've been reading through that. Now we come down to verse 4. It says, and whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, Remember, he's going to go to Shiloh to do this. He said he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. And the portion he was talking about here that he gave to that part of the family was the sacrifice that would come back to him. Now, this was the fellowship offering where you would take up your sacrifice and then the priest would give a portion of it to the Lord, and he'd also give a portion back to you. And that way you're able to enjoy this fellowship meal with the Lord. And that was the idea behind it. So this is the portion he's giving back to that part of the family. And it's interesting, it mentions here, you know, that Peninnah had these sons and daughters. So we're not told exactly how many, but we know she had at least four kids at this point. So it's interesting, I'm sure, in Elkanah's mind, he's thinking he made the right decision. I got kids now, you know. But there's a problem, and it comes up there in verse 5. It said, but to Hannah, he would give a double portion. And it tells us why he did that. For he loved Hannah. So you get the idea that he loved Hannah more than he did Elkanah, which would be understandable. It's hard for us to split our affections like that equally between people in a close relationship like that. So he cares about her more, and he shows it by giving her a double portion from these sacrifices. But it tells us here at the end of verse 5, he loved Hannah. It says, although the Lord had closed her womb. Now notice that. Then you get to verse 6, and her rival, which is Peninnah, also provoked her, not just a little bit. Notice it says severely. And why did she do that? To make her miserable. And it says here the reason for that, because the Lord had closed her womb. So the Lord mentions this twice, that her womb was closed, but it also mentions he's the one who did that. So here by Elkanah treating Hannah differently, he's kind of adding fuel to the fire. He's giving her a double portion, and his actions were going to stir up jealousy in Peninnah, and that comes out in the story too here. So all of this was going to produce a very messed up family. And what's going on? They're just doing things their own way, you know, and sometimes they're doing things without thinking them through. Because I don't think he sat down and thought, you know, if I treat her more special, he's going to make the other one upset, and then we might have problems. He doesn't apparently go there. So we can do some dumb stuff at times too. And the whole while, we're thinking that we're doing the right thing. You know, yeah, and it might be right in our way of thinking, but the question we ask, is it right in God's way of thinking? Because his ways are perfect. Ours are flawed. So then you look at this picture. Why was Hannah not having children at that time? And it mentions it very clearly a couple times, because God had closed her womb. Now, by telling us that, and I think the Lord, since he emphasized it twice, really close together here, I think he's letting us know something, that God is at work in her life. He was doing something in her life at that time. You know, somebody might say, but wait a minute, I thought God only did good stuff for people. Closing the womb sounds like it's kind of a rough deal in that time period. Well, God only does good stuff. That's absolutely true. No problem there. But we may notice at this point, sometimes you just don't get it while it's going on and some of the stuff that God's doing, because God's working on a much bigger scale, you know, a lot bigger than we can imagine ourselves from moment to moment. And his big scale he's working on is to eventually produce good in the long run. And that's the thing that we've got to keep telling ourselves, because there are times that the Lord might be shutting things down in our life and we're thinking, why, Lord? Why are you doing that? But God's working on that bigger scale. He's got a lot of things going, and it's always for good for his children, right, in the long run. So we got to keep that in mind. And let's remind ourselves something that the Lord told Moses this in Exodus 4. Remember when Moses was complaining about his speech problem, and he was telling the Lord, trying to use that as an excuse why he couldn't go back to Egypt and talk to Pharaoh. Remember what the Lord said there? And in Exodus 4, it says, so the Lord said to Moses, who has made man's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? And then he doesn't say the devil does all this stuff. He says, have not I the Lord? So the Lord was declaring to Moses that he was responsible for those things happening in people's lives. And we know that he always has a purpose for what he's doing. You know, and that purpose is always good for his children, right? All things work together for good for those that are called and loved by the Lord. So for his children, it's always going to turn out good in the long run, even though it may look kind of rough at certain points along the way. And remember, too, when the disciples were asking Jesus, you know, whose sin caused this man to be born blind? Was it his sin or his mom's sin or dad's? And Jesus, remember how he responded to him? He said, neither this man nor his parents sinned. That wasn't the issue that caused his blindness, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. So the Lord had a purpose for that man's blindness, and it was a good one. So God's glory could be revealed in him. So when the Lord was working in Hannah's life by closing her womb, God was just being God. You know, what's God doing in your life right now? Whatever it is, if God's doing it, then just know that he's got a bigger plan at work. So hang in there. Now notice what happened to Hannah while the Lord was working in her life. This, I think, is something we can pay attention to and learn from as well. How did people treat her because God was at work in her life closing her womb? Well, we're told that her husband, he loved her very much. But the other wife provoked her severely in order to make her miserable, it says. You know what? This is what we can expect too, especially when God's at work in our life. Some people will love us, and some people will give us a really hard time. And that's just the way it is. That's the same way they treated Jesus, right? Some people loved him, and other people were very mean to him. You know, and the ones who loved Jesus, if you notice, they were a lot smaller in number than those who mistreated him. You know, so don't get your hopes up too high when you step out to serve the Lord. Remember, Jesus said this to the disciples in John 15. If the world hates you, you know it hated me before it hated you. And we need to just accept that one. So sorry if that burst your bubble today, but hey, it'll be worth it in the end, okay? Now verse 7, it goes on. So it was year by year when she went up to the house of the Lord, and this is talking about Peninnah with her attitude towards Hannah, when she went up to the house of the Lord that she provoked her. So every year they were going, this beating, this verbal lashing was coming, and it says, therefore she wept and did not eat. So the picture here is every year when they were getting ready to go to the house of the Lord, right? That's where they're going to go to worship. Peninnah made sure that Hannah was miserable. What a nice reason to come to worship, huh? To ruin somebody else's time. You know, I don't know if you've met people like this before or not, but I have, unfortunately. Some people come to church and their only goal seems to be to make somebody miserable. You know, I never understood this because I would think that you'd come to church to worship God and to hear from the Lord. And that would make sense to me. But I found out that I wasn't the only one to run into this kind of person. You know, that the Lord actually led me to a book that was called Antagonists in the Church. And it explained how these people seem to live just to aggravate other people in a bad way. And that book also had some suggestions on how to handle this type of person. Well, I'm not going to tell you what those were. But if we ever have someone show up here who's got that attitude, I'll let you in on how to deal with them at that time. Okay. Verse 8 goes on. Then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, so he's going to try to comfort her, but you ladies, you'll catch this pretty quick here. So Elkanah talks to her and he says in verse 8, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? So how would you ladies like to be asked these questions when you're hurting as bad as Hannah was here? You know, this guy was really being a guy, wasn't he? He's not being very understanding. And I think he's kind of saying, hey, look, honey, I know I married this other gal and she's popping out a bunch of kids for me, and that's cool. But you know, everything's going to be okay for you too. It's like, and so he's asking her then, so why are you so sad? It's like, mercy's sakes, you know, do you not know what's going on? So I can just hear some of the ladies saying, Sounds just like a guy, you know. So you ladies, Lord bless you. You got to be patient with us guys, but us guys, we got to pay attention to you and not do stupid stuff that's going to bring you more grief than you already have going in your life. Now, the feast here that it mentions they were going to, that should have been a very festive time. You know, it should have been a time for rejoicing and getting a chance to enjoy the fresh fruit that just came in from the new harvest. But for Hannah, it was a time of grieving, and she didn't get a chance to enjoy this at all. Her husband, he tried to encourage her the best he knew how. He was saying, you know, that he tried to give her more love than if she had 10 sons, and loving her, that she would have brought forth. So this makes me think that this other wife was probably picking on Hannah and harassing her when he wasn't looking, if he really didn't know what was going on. And it sounds like Hannah never told him how bad things were either. So she wasn't a complainer, it sounds like, you know. Now, this is just like the enemy trying to make sure that you're miserable when you come to church to worship the Lord. Have you noticed how many things seem to go wrong when you're getting ready to come to church? Yeah, the enemy's not happy about you coming. So we realize that. Now, down to verse 9, it says, so Hannah arose after they had finished eating and drinking, after the meal was over in Shiloh. And it says, now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And we get from the story later that Eli's an older guy, so he's really not busy doing the service of the Lord at this point. His sons are, they're the active priests that are working. But he's still there and kind of keep an eye on place and supervises stuff. So as he's sitting there, he's able to see what's going to take place. So verse 10, it says, and she was in bitterness of soul. So Hannah's really, really hurting here. And she prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. So it's interesting here that Hannah seems to be a much better person than Peniah. You know, and yet Peniah was the one having kids. You know, do you think Hannah was wondering about that? Why is she blessed when I'm the nicer person? You know, and we could ask questions like that too at times, you know. We think we're doing the best for the Lord, and we see other people who don't seem to be doing much, and they're getting a blessing. You know, they don't seem to be that gung-ho for the Lord, so why is their life seem to be going so well? But sometimes, like in this story, the Lord has some big plans down the road for us, but it just doesn't time for that to happen yet, you know? So be patient, wait upon the Lord. He knows what he's doing, even when we don't. And here's Hannah, at this point, who probably feels like such a failure anyway because she can't produce any sons for her husband, you know, and then she's got this other woman that lives in the same house with her who gives her such a hard time every year when this festival comes around. And so, you know, after so many years of being tormented, Hannah finally got to the point where she couldn't take it anymore. So what does she do? She goes to the tabernacle to pour out her heart to the Lord. And you know, if stuff keeps bothering us and bothering us and bothering us, maybe the Lord's just waiting for us to come to him. You know, I just wonder if Hannah could have maybe gotten some relief if she'd have come sooner and brought her troubles to the Lord. I don't know. I'm just saying it makes you wonder. We don't ever do that, right? We don't ever wait and holding things back from coming to the Lord. No, not us, you know. There's probably somebody here right now, if not all of us maybe, that we've got something that's eating at us, and you know, we just have to ask, have we given it to the Lord yet? You know, are we still holding on to it and running it over and over in our mind and letting it bother us and everything, rather than just going to him and casting all of our cares on him? Because he cares about us. He told us that, you know. And he can help us. He can do this something for us today. He can give us his peace. We don't have to carry all this stuff. So don't wait. You know, if it's you he's talking to, bring it to the Lord right away. Don't wait any longer. Remember in Hebrews 4, the Lord told us this. Come boldly to the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. The Lord knows we're going to have a time of need. So he said, don't hold back. Come on. Get the grace, get the mercy, get the help that you need. So verse 11, as it goes on, then she made a vow. So here she is pouring her heart out to the Lord, and Hannah's going to make this vow. And here's what she said. O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child. So she's making a very specific request, not just for a child, but for a male child. Then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head. And that's a Nazirite vow she's making for her child here to the Lord. So Hannah, she's got the right attitude here. You notice she refers to herself over and over, three times here in this short prayer. She refers to herself as the Lord's maidservant. So she's acknowledging she's the servant and he's the Lord. And that's something we always need to remind ourselves. You know, we got to remember he's God and we're not. We're his servant. And another thing you notice here is that Hannah is only asking for one thing. She doesn't have a huge list, did you notice? There's just one thing she's asking for. But the one thing is the most important thing in her life. And here's the part we got to catch. If she gets that thing that she's asking for, that one thing that is so important to her, then she said she's going to give it right back to God. Beautiful picture here. That's an amazing thing. Can we say that about the most important thing in our life right now? That, Lord, if you give me this, I'll give it right back to you. Amazing. So Hannah was saying that she wasn't just going to dedicate this male child to the Lord to serve at the tabernacle when he grows up. That'd be pretty cool in itself. But she was saying she would actually make a Nazirite vow and offer this child back to the Lord as soon as she was able to get him weaned, as soon as he could be away from mama. So he would be given to the Lord for all of his life to serve in the tabernacle, including his childhood. That's how serious she wanted this child. Verse 12, it says, and it happened as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli watched her mouth. Now Hannah spoke in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli thought she was drunk. And the way it's describing her is it says she continued praying. The idea is that she was praying for a long time. This wasn't just the very brief prayer we saw here. She was continually pouring this out to the Lord. And you almost get the idea that she wasn't going to quit praying until she got an answer. So that's kind of the picture it shows us here. So Eli is watching all this. And you notice, here's this lady. She's weeping, she's sobbing, her lips are moving, no words are coming out. So what does he conclude? She must be drunk. Now, I don't want to get down on him too hard. Remember the time period they're in. He's probably used to seeing a lot of drunk people and probably a lot of them showing up at the place of worship. So he's like, oh my goodness, here's another lady. So he's going to try to step in and do something here. So yeah, somebody said this about her prayer though. It's better to have a heart of prayer with no words than to have the words of prayer with no heart. I thought that was a really powerful statement. Verse 14. So Eli said to her, how long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you. And the language that was used here, we don't catch it in our English too well, but Eli was talking to her with a very comforting tone. You know, he was telling her basically to go sleep it off. And I'm sure he was thinking that, you know, you can come back when you're sober and then you can sincerely worship the Lord. Now remember that Israel, again, was pretty much a mess at this time, and this was at the close of the time of Judges, so Eli, again, he was probably pretty used to seeing people showing up soused at the tabernacle. So it was a bit encouraging me, to find out that the language he was using here was very comforting and not condemning and not judging. And you know, it would be easy to get upset with someone when you think they're messed up and not respecting the things of the Lord. But here we find out that Eli was completely wrong. So if he'd come down hard on her at this point, he would have been wrong. It had nothing to do with what was going on in her life. So we need to be very careful about judging people too quickly. We could end up with egg in our face. So verse 15 goes on. But Hannah answered, as he's now, you know, told her this, she said, no, my Lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink. So I didn't have anything. She said, but I've poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant, notice that humble term again, a wicked woman. For out of the abundance of my complaint and grief, I have spoken until now. So she explained to him, you know, that she was just full of sorrow and she had a broken heart. She wanted him to know that she was sincerely seeking the Lord, you know, and that she would never come before the Lord in a state of drunkenness, never enter her mind to do something like that. She even spoke very respectfully to him, you know, and she was very humble, calling herself his maidservant. So it's like she was saying, and I think this is a thought running through her mind probably, my husband, he doesn't understand me, and apparently you don't understand me either. So I'm just praying that God understands. Have you ever been to that point? Could it be that the Lord was working on her through all of this to get her to a place where she could see that she really needed to just trust the Lord? Because there really was no one else who could help her. You know, her husband can't make her have a child. He can do his part, but it's up to God, you know? And this guy here, he didn't understand her. He thought she was doing the wrong thing. So this poor lady, wow. You know, maybe that's what God's doing in our life too. Maybe we're still trusting in too many things. And the Lord wants us to see that he's our answer. He's what we really need. I'm sorry. Hannah seemed to get to that point, and that's actually a good place to be. Somebody said that when Hannah was weeping and mourning here, she was concerned about her physical barrenness. But we should mourn over our spiritual barrenness. And they made an excellent point when they said that. If we see that our life is not being as fruitful as we had hoped for the Lord, then we should be mourning over that and begging the Lord to help us get back on the path that he has for us. Verse 17, then Eli answered and said, now that he hears the story and knows that she just got a broken heart, he says, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant you your petition, which you have asked of him. When Eli responded, you know, he wasn't trying to make a prediction or anything. That's not what you hear. He was just telling her that she could leave in peace, and he was asking the Lord to bless her by answering her request. And it appears that the peace of the Lord must have come over at that time, because we're going to see here in the next verse that she just felt that her burden had been lifted, and she felt that she could go back to living. Have you ever felt the Lord just lift a burden off you and replace it with his peace? That's a very blessed place to be if you've ever experienced that. And the amazing thing is, that kind of experience is only for believers. A lost person will never get that. So what changed here between verses 17 and verse 18? Because we're going to see her respond a very different way than she has been up to this point. What changed? Did she have kids all of a sudden or anything? Nope. Nothing really changed on the outside for her. But what changed on the inside was that she now had faith. Now she believed that God was going to do something. And that's what brought her peace so she could go on. You know, the Lord really just calls us to trust him. It's really that simple. The Lord's saying, just trust me. And isn't it amazing how hard that seems to be for us? To just let go and trust him. So verse 18, as she said, let your maidservant find favor in your sight. So the woman went her way, and she ate, and her face was no longer sad. So the words of the high priest gave her strength and comfort. And that's what our priest, high priest Jesus, can do for us too, when we cast all our cares on him. We're not told this at all, but what do you think Peninnah thought when she saw Hannah all happy and eating? You know, the Lord doesn't point us to her to look at this moment, but I just wonder what her reaction was. Like, what's your problem? What makes you happy now? I'm trying to make you miserable. Yeah, I don't think she could steal her joy anymore. You know, and if we can keep our focus on the Lord, then the enemy can't steal our joy either. The enemy's trick, and we need to really get this one, the enemy's trick is to get us to look at ourselves and not keep our eyes on Jesus. That's his trick. Have you ever noticed that? When you focus on yourself and your problems and your situations and your consequences, what does it do? It just gets you down. But if you can just take all of that and put it aside and say, Lord, this stuff is not helping me. I'm going to put it in your hands. You told me to do that. You said, cast all my cares, and these are some heavy cares, and I'm putting them in your hands. And Lord, right now, I'm just going to praise you. I'm going to thank you and worship you. I'm going to turn to you and put my focus on you. If you've ever done that at one of those moments when you're feeling all this heavy burden, what happens? The peace of God comes in. You can actually rejoice in your heart when you couldn't a few minutes earlier. Yeah, so it's a great picture for us on how to deal with the enemy when he's trying to make you miserable, and you might find out, what am I doing? I'm looking in the mirror. I need to get away from the mirror and look at the Lord, because he's the one who's the answer, right? So verse 19, then they rose early in the morning, sounds like the whole family here, and they worship before the Lord. And they returned, and they came to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So it's saying the Lord answered her prayer. And I like the way the Lord said it. The Lord, you know, she asked him, Lord, don't forget me, but remember me. And he did just that. Direct answer to prayer. He doesn't ever forget us anyway, but sometimes you might feel that way. Verse 20 goes on. So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son and called his name Samuel. And here's what she said, because I have asked for him from the Lord. So she's saying this is a direct answer to prayer. And you know what the name Samuel means? God heard. Can you imagine? Anytime she spoke of Samuel, she was always telling that testimony, God heard. I prayed and God heard. Beautiful picture here. So verse 21, now the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, not until the child is weaned, then I will take him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever. Now, some have wondered, you know, was she just trying to hold on a little longer? And that's possible. Maybe she's saying, my little baby, you know, I'll take care of him. But when he's old enough, and I think it was about 3 in their time period, then she was going to bring him to the Lord. But even then, can you imagine giving up your 3-year-old? Dropping him off and saying, I'll see you maybe when I come back to worship. But other than that, we'll see you every day. That's a tough one. Now, verse 21, as she was saying this, she said, when I wean him, you know, then I'm going to give him to the Lord, and he will remain there forever. Normally, the Levites, if you remember, we studied that, they would serve at the tabernacle from basically the ages of 25 or so to the age of 50. And that was their duty, their role at that time. But Hannah here, she was dedicating him to the Lord for his entire life, from his childhood on. So verse 23 says, so Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word. Then the woman stayed and nursed her son until she had weaned him. So her husband was basically saying, okay, you can do this and that's all right. But we're going to give this child to the Lord. I mean, that's what the Lord had laid on your heart. That's what you had promised to him. And he said, let the word of the Lord be established. So we're going to follow through with that. Now, when she had weaned him, it says in verse 24, she took him up with her with 3 bulls, 1 ephah of flour and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. Then they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli. Now, there's some questions on this too. When they brought these animals and all these things to the Lord to sacrifice, get the picture here. Not only was she already bringing her son, but she was also bringing this costly sacrifice because the bulls were valuable back then. And that's a cool thing for us to see. It's not her saying, well, I'm giving my son so I don't have to do the other stuff. No, she gave the son and she also sacrificed the things that were important to him as well. But there's some discussion on this depending on what Bible translation you're using. In verse 24, when it talks about the 3 bulls, some Bibles say 3 bulls, some say a bull of 3 years of age, and there's some little bit of discussion on that one. The point is she brought the sacrifice that she was supposed to bring. Some people look at it and say, well, I think it was actually three, because when it mentions the other elements, the ephah of flour, that was a lot of flour, and a skin of wine, that was a lot of wine too. So they're saying the other elements were kind of in excess, so they think she probably did bring the three as well. But either way you look at it, just know that she did. Definitely, they did bring the sacrifice they were supposed to. So verse 25 again, they slaughtered a bull, brought the child to Eli, and she said, oh, my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. So this should have been an encouragement for Eli, I think. You know, knowing that somebody he ministered to and had blessed was actually giving back to the Lord. And that's really cool. So verse 27, for this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I asked of him. So she said, I got answered prayers right here. Therefore, I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord. And the idea is that he was giving him to the Lord. That the word lent here is kind of an unusual way of translating that. Because when she says, I'm giving to him to the Lord all of his life, it lets you know I'm just not, you know, lending him for a short time. So it says at the end of verse 28, and this is another beautiful picture here, so they worship the Lord there. You know, they fulfilled their vow. They gave the Lord their child. What an awesome thing to do. Who can take better care of our kids than God? You know, who has a better plan for our kids than he does? You know, we should be careful when we make all these plans for what we want our kids to do in life, especially if we're leaving God out of the equation. I've seen Christians do that before. You know, they had all these plans of the American way, and they forgot it's God's way. And thankfully, I saw in some of those kids that those things happened in. The Lord grabbed the kids' heart anyway, and they went toward the direction of the Lord. Even though the parents were concerned that they just make sure they have a good living in this life, you know. And it's like, you ain't going to get a better living than the Lord. He's like, I got it all, right? So as we get ready to close, if you get a problem right now that you're dealing with, you know, we have to ask ourselves the question, is this something I need to turn over to God? Am I trusting God with my life? You know, this story should encourage us too that God is always the answer that we need. You know, and the Lord didn't forget Hannah, and he's not going to forget you. You know, turn to him and trust him. And we also have to ask that question, you know, have we given our children to the Lord? Have we said, Lord, they're yours. Do with them as you will. Because that's the best thing we can do for them. So let's pray. Father, we want to thank you for your word. Thank you for the lessons you teach us here. Father, I pray you grab our hearts. If we're not living for you and we don't see the fruit that's there, Lord, I pray you would burden us with that. Help us to just grieve over that, Lord, until we just surrender to you and we get back to where you want us to be and fulfilling the plan you have for our life. And Lord, we want to be there. We know our time is short in this world. Our day to leave this world is coming very soon. And Lord, when we stand before you, we all want to say that I wasted my life on selfishness. We want to be able to hear from you, well done, thou good and faithful servant. And Father, I thank you for the forgiveness we have in Christ, because we've messed up, we've done things wrong, but you're so forgiving for us, and we just praise you. Father, if there's someone here today who doesn't know Jesus, I pray, Lord, today, let them see the need of their heart, the need of their life, to have their sins completely removed. And we know the only way that happens is by coming to Jesus. So, Lord, I pray you help them to get on the knees in their heart and say, Jesus, I thank you that you died for my sins and that you rose again. And I just want to ask you to come into my life and to be the Lord, to take my life and use it as you will. And Father, I pray for anybody who's willing to do that. I ask you to completely save them, let them experience your presence, fill them with your spirit, and just use them for your glory. Father, we give ourselves to you again right now. We just renew our commitment to you. We belong to you. You died for us. We're yours. And we just want to say thank you. Please use our life for your glory. We give you all the praise in Jesus' name. Amen.